This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast, and you're listening to me, Stamford Chidge, and him over there, Mr. Jonathan Kidd. Whoop. And the other him over there, Mr. Clayton Bierman, who's got Hello. Himself a very... Actually, that's a very good idea, Clayton. Clayton's opening... See, Clayton and I should not advertise this because it's an exclusive members club, but Clayton and I belong to the virtual pub walkers thing on a little kind of Zoom group. On a Friday evening with some of our mates, some of whom we drink within the cock, you see. So we quite often have a beer, don't we, on a Friday night together in a virtual sense. And he's just opened one, and it's tempted me. This is the one I was going to drink on Friday, Clayton, but never mind. Needs must. So there you go.
Well, due to lockdown, I've actually run out of beer. So I'm having a couple. We're a birthday present. Yeah. And this is Wold Top. Wold Gold blonde beer, and it is really, really very pleasant.
Wold Gold, it sounds like something Jonathan Ross might drink.
Wold Gold, I think you're right.
Right, anyway, the main business of this evening for us is, of course, having a good old look back at the season that was 1978-79. Again, this is, I think we're going to have to call this, what do they call it? It's like BC and AD, isn't it? So I think we'll have to call this era of Chelsea BC, before Chidge, because I've still not really yet found my way to regularly going to Stamford Bridge. But I can tell you that these two chaps here, these two fine chaps, were definitely there and thereabouts. So my first thing, I'm going to ask you, Clayton, actually. Chelsea, you know, in spite of all the obvious evidence, because they were dreadful the season before, as anybody who listened to the show last week will remember. But they were tipped for a quick return again. Did you think people are mad, or did you your hopes and expectations were such that you thought, yeah, of course?
I think the thing is, at that time, we had assumed the mantle of a bit of a yo-yo club. We'd been up, we'd been down, we'd been up, we'd been down. And so the thought that we could basically go up again was not completely foreign. But you did actually have to check and see whether the men in white coats are around. But I honestly can't remember the beginning of that season, the strength of the other teams in the division. So I can't remember whether we went down and the team that we went, that were relegated, would have been perceived to have been a better bet than the other teams who were relegated and who were actually in the old second division at that time. There wasn't anything in our squad that gave us a huge amount of hope after the absolute codswallop that we'd watched the year before. Well, but, you know, I think I've said, and when we've reviewed seasons before, that there is always an optimism. At the start of any season, yeah. there is an optimism.
Well, it's interesting you say that you know, the squad, I mean, the squad was most definitely not as strong as before because, of course, Jonathan, we'd sold Ray Wilkins for 900 grand, which made many of my generation and a bit older tearful, to say the least. And, of course, Clayton's hero, Peter Benetti, finally retired at a grand old age. I think he was 38, wasn't he, when he retired? So we were weaker already, weren't we, JK?
Well, I don't think he'd been great towards the end of the last season, Benetti. I think we were aware that he was on his last legs a bit. He always threw himself wonderfully into every challenge with a forward on goal, and he was fearless, and he always got injured. And I think his body had great difficulty recovering from the injuries because he was getting older and older, and he didn't quite have the same spring in his legs. So I think it was a mutual thing, wasn't it, about Benetti? But then we'd replaced him with the eccentricities of the bizarre Petr Borota, who I have to say I was more my memory had failed me about Borota because I remember thinking that he was eccentric but sort of quite good, and in fact the reality is, watching some of these clips back, he was just eccentric and terrible. So it was very, very difficult looking very positive about it. But I mean, as I mean, Clayton's absolutely right. You always approach each season with an optimism because you think the teams in the division will never be as good as they were in the first division before. But nonetheless, the season before, they were so terrible. It was difficult thinking they're going to get out of this first time. So, you always hope. There's always that dreadful hope that somehow they'll get something together, that they'll select a group of players that will gel. But as you say, Wilkins disappearing leaving for United was a blow. But I mean, I was a Mickey Fillery fan. I thought he was excellent most of the time, and Walker, Clive Walker. So there was always hope with that. I don't know. Not being terribly aware of what was going on behind the scenes, there was always the feeling that a new signing might appear and then just somehow push them into a different standard. So you've got a kind of double thing going on, haven't you? You've got hope that you watch the first few games, it's hoping they'll win them. And when they're not playing very well, or it's not quite as easy as you thought it was going to be, then your enthusiasm sort of disappears, dips a bit, and you then aren't observing in the same way.
I think the fact that we beat the China 11-3-1 in a friendly would have been enough to give everybody hopes that we would bounce back up. But talking of people, we didn't really get anybody in. I mean, Peter Rhodes-Brown signed professional forms, and Colin Pates signed professional forms that summer. But we let Gary Stanley go, actually, the day before Ray Wilkins, which I've completely forgotten about. He went to Everton for 300 grand. I mean, we all know why they were selling. Yeah, they were selling players because they were skint and they needed the money. But they did all right. I mean, the first kind of few weeks of the season. Oh, no, they didn't do all right at all. I'm lying, of course. We drew 0-0 against Sunderland at home, which was a fairly close fought affair. And then we managed to lose away to West Ham. I haven't even started this beer, Clayton, and yet the smell of it's clearly got me pissed. Yes, we drew 0-0 against Sunderland, and then we won away against West Ham, which is never no mean feat in those days. They ended up winning the cup that year, and then we won at home against Wrexham with an Eddie Nijveki in goal, believe it or not. And then we played Plymouth Argyle in the cup, and we drew 2-2, and then we lost to Newcastle away 2-1, and then we got booted out of the League Cup against Plymouth Argyle on aggregate. And basically, after that, they got rid of this surreal, quirky manager that had been Danny Blanchflower. And in the summer, Jeff Hurst had been acquired as the first team coach, and they promoted him to the manager, with Bobby Gould coming in to replace Danny Blanchflower. So Clayton, what did you think about Chelsea having the hero of 1966 as the manager of our club with his great track record of managing Telford?
I think that at the time...
Jonathan, I'm sorry, I need to bite, because I just saw Jonathan's face there. He's grimacing at the memory of it. Sorry, mate, but carry on.
I think at the time, and Jonathan may correct me, that quite frankly, had they appointed Hector from Hector's House, a popular TV program at the time,
with Kiki, Danny, as the assistant, right?
Yeah, to replace Danny Blanchflower, I think I would have been happy. I mean, Danny Blanchflower was possibly, and it's quite a very high bar, but possibly the most ridiculously stupid, inappropriate, and ridiculous appointment the club's ever made. And it was obviously based on the fact that he was willing to do the job for a couple of pints of stout and a packet of peanuts as a weekly wage, because there was no logic to it. It was just insane.
Who came up with that? Who on the boardroom came up with that idea? I mean,
I've got no idea, but it set the club back. I don't know. It was for what? It was probably less than half a season in total. Because he was like the last third of the relegation season and then the first couple of weeks of this season. But the fact was that once, I mean, I don't know if you want me to go on, but once Jeff Hurst got into his stride, we had, and I don't know if my memory's playing tricks with me, but I think that initially he was only appointed as a caretaker. He won, I think it was either 5 or 6 games in a row. And on the back of that, he was appointed permanent manager. And his first game in charge as permanent manager, we lost. We lost home to Fulham.
We did.
I remember, because I was there. We lost 2-0. And I think the infamous John Beck possibly scored one or both goals. But it was good because
he was a good player, Beck.
Oh my God, he was tough as whatever.
Tough as teak.
Thank you so much.
You're right. Sorry to butt in. I'm just having a fact check here. Jeff Beck, who later, of course, became a world-renowned guitarist, he scored on 60 minutes, and then Gordon Davies. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
He scored on 87 minutes. And then who was the manager? Who was the manager?
Of Fulham?
Yeah.
At the time?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It wasn't Alex Stock, was it?
Alex Stock.
Nope. Bobby Campbell.
Wow.
How about those apples?
Wow.
So, I mean, you're right, Clayton, in all of that, mate. Well remembered. I'm gold star, mate. You know, the quality. I mean, Jonathan, I can't remember what happened last week. You're doing very well here.
I do remember that because it was just so Chelsea.
It was so Chelsea. I mean, they did basically get the gig because they reeled off wins against Watford 2-0, Cambridge away 1-0, Burnley away 1-0. Chelsea against Bristol Rovers 1-0. There's a pattern emerging here, isn't there, that would come back to haunt us in later elements of his career. And then we won 2-1 away at Cardiff. But in the meantime, or kind of at that same time, he managed to completely piss Peter Osgood off, who kind of basically retired in a flounce saying that he'd stabbed Blanchflower in the back. And he managed to sell Eamon Bannon, who, of course, was cherry-picked, hand-picked by Blanchflower, and actually... You know, he was quite a decent player, as he then went on to prove by ending up playing for Scotland. Remember that, Jonathan?
I do indeed. I liked him as a player.
Agreed.
He didn't set the place alight, but he looked very industrious and very compact, and he was decent. And I thought he'd have a very good second season, but alas, no, not given an opportunity.
Well,
he was a great passer of the ball.
He was a very decent player.
Quality player, actually.
It's interesting, wasn't it, that I listened to John Sitton's discussion about playing for Chelsea, and he said that Jeff Hurst was one of the worst managers he ever played for, because all he did was just get him to run everywhere. The ball was never used. And if any ball work was done, it was always via Bobby Gould, we'd sort of secrete them off somewhere to play with the ball. But he said that, and his big thing, of course, is John Sitton said that when he was a student, that Eddie Mack was this great manager who, of course, should have carried on managing them because would have managed them to great success. It was just interesting hearing it from a player at the time. But he said that that Hurst was definitely the worst manager he ever put me under.
Well, having as Clayton so rightly said, got the gig and then losing to Fulham and then Sunderland, we then played Leighton Orient on Saturday the 10th of November it's one of the most remarkable games that I don't know about at all. It never comes up in discussion or Chelsea history at all. But for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Chelsea won 7-3. And the other thing that's remarkable to me is that there were two players playing in that match who I just have no real recollection of. Sorry, one player, certainly. Lee Frost. Lee Frost, who scores a hat-trick, right? Who is Lee Frost? Whatever happened to Lee Frost?
Well, he was a little pocket battleship of a player. And he put it about a bit and was very skillful. And it was no surprise to me that he was scoring, but he then fell from favour, as appears to be the case. They have sort of limited time in the team. Like, it was also Johnson was a decent.
Yeah, I was thinking of him too. Again, somebody I don't have really any recollection of at all. But
just really good in the air and decent skills. And I don't think it was a time for being given opportunities. I think Hurst was very specific. It's very interesting watching lots of these games again, is that you appreciate, and I've said this before about the ball being passed back to the goalie rule, but it does mean that the ball is lumped up the field an enormous amount, and particularly from defence, particularly Mickey Droy, unfortunately, was never the most cultured of players. just kick the ball.
One of the games that Chish gave us a link to, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was the Charlton game where we won 3-1.
Yeah.
And Mickey Droy just took the ball out of defence and just whacked it forward. There was nobody there. It just went straight to the goalkeeper. And God bless him. He gave everything for the club. And I love Mickey Droy because
he was captain at the time, remember?
Yeah.
So come on then, Clayton. Do you remember the 7-3 against Orient? Tell me about it.
I wasn't there, but I do remember it. And it was just, it was bizarre. It was utterly bizarre because the result came from nowhere. And as you alluded to, is that the team had trouble scoring goals. And then for all of a sudden to come up with 7, it was utterly bizarre. I mean, I can't remember. I just saw the result in the evening and I just thought, what? Yeah. Didn't make any sense at all.
But as a consequence of all of this, they started rising up the league, didn't they?
Well,
things were working for them. So you can't understand. I still don't understand why Frost and Johnson were in and out of the side and then ultimately disappeared, because they were clearly playing very well. But I remember it's that thing of watching a new player. I always have. I'm sure that we're all the same. We have great enthusiasm for a new player who comes in and we want them to do really well. And if you see players doing really well, you think, yeah, great, let's see them playing again next week. And then they're not in the team the following week and they play well. I don't get, I've never got that. I've never understood that.
But I think that with those two, I think there was Hurst obviously favoured Tommy Langley and Clive Walker up front. And I think those guys missed out because he seemed wedded to those two. And, you know, to be fair.
No better players.
And to be fair, Clive Walker was a remarkably good player. And one thing when I was looking at...
He could be awful on his day, though, Clayton.
He could be. He could be awful. But name me a winger that consistently has a good game every week.
No, true enough. And I mean, to be fair, So who, Jonathan?
Steve Coppell.
Okay, good point, till he got injured. He was very inconsistent after that. Yeah, Walker ends up being the top goal scorer with 13 and top appearance maker as well with about 42 appearances, I think. So, you know, don't diss Clive Walker. Now, I'm desperate to know whether you were at the next game, which was Chelsea against West Ham on the 14th of November. It was an evening kickoff, so you might not have been. Were you at that match, Clayton?
No, I wasn't, because during this season and the season before, and after I was at uni, so I couldn't get to all the home games, but I know what you're going to say. This was tasty.
Yeah, Jonathan, do you remember the Chelsea West Ham match after the...
I was there.
Right. Okay. What's this match famous for? And it's not us beating them 2-1.
Fighting.
Yes.
Yes, what a surprise.
The cheeky, chirpy Cockneys caused a lot of ag that night because they basically all congregated in the shed end.
Just take over. Yeah, that's right. Wasn't there a constant sort of pushing people around the pitch, around the... and luckily, I was ensconced in my seat in the East Stand upper, so I wasn't having to... We just observed, thinking, oh, God, here they go again. Oh, look, they've pushed them round that side. Oh, look, they've chased them round that side. Well, oh, look, the police are in here now.
If you read Kelvin Barker's marvellous Celery Representing Chelsea in the 80s, which is the definitive work on this era, and Kelvin will be coming on. I've got an announcement to make about the 50 years of Chelsea at the end of the show, but Kelvin will be coming on a few of these. And if in his book, he says that basically about, I don't know, something like 200 West Ham fans... very incognito, assembled at the bottom of the shed, which of course is where the kids used to go, and then they went loopy when who scored for them? Holland scored on 25 minutes to go 1-0. They announced themselves, at which point the Chelsea lot in the shed all absolutely went for them. Bit of a pitch battle, and then they were on the pitch. Well, actually, no. Apparently, the West Ham fans on the other end started to come on as well. So it was a right old ding dong. Not very pleasant if you're in the middle of it, I would imagine. Luckily, I wasn't. Clayton wasn't. And you were in the East Stand, so you got away with it. But you know what you said a minute ago, JK, about us being top? We were in sixth when we played West Ham. We were in the third when we then played Charlton, which is one of the matches that I shared with you from YouTube. And then Notts County, the away match, where I thought we got hammered and still won 3-2. Lord knows how.
How they missed all those open goals. It was hysterical. They were as bad as we were.
Well, they were. I was astonished. You know, Jonathan's muted himself somehow. I'm going to unmute him. There you go. You're about to say something, LB.
I mean, you know, they just missed goal after goal after goal, didn't they?
They did, didn't they? Yeah.
They had that really excellent player playing, Masson.
Yeah, Don Masson.
Don Masson.
Then went to play for Forest, didn't he, after that, I think?
No, he went to QPR.
Did he go to QPR? Yep. Okay.
He was part of that side that nearly won the league.
Right.
So there you go. Bottom line is that we were top of the league by the end of the calendar year. So, I mean, how were you both feeling then? You must think, well, hello, yeah, we are going to go right back up.
Well, they were playing very well. And as you said, Clayton, Clive Walker was terrific. And so was... and Fillery was playing out of his skin. Fillery had that great ability to... just dribble past lots of people and curl shots in. He was a very classy player, Mickey Fillery. And I've said I didn't consequently miss Butch that much. But we were in the second division, so the standard of team they're playing against obviously wasn't the same. But because Fillery looked to me to be a real class act. I mean, they did have this ability to there was something going right at the club in that they were getting hold of players coming through who you thought, well, actually, he's pretty decent. Gary Lott was still a terrific fullback. What happened to David Stride? He'd played the last few games of the season before. Did he play very much?
He was sold. He was sold to an American team, I think, if memory serves me right. So we actually got money for him.
We got money for him. But basically, the premise was so frequently, let's sell somebody rather than make a team up that is going to... do well in the next division.
David Stride got sold to Memphis Rogues for 90 grand on the 31st of October.
So somebody made it. Okay. Obviously, Hearst made a decision he wasn't up to it.
Or the board made a decision that they had to pay the wages up to Christmas.
Indeed.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah,
of course. Can I just ask a question? If you are playing for Chelsea and you're not a bad, you know, you look pretty good and you're sturdy and you've got a good stride and everybody thinks and you think, yeah, he's got potential and you're young. Why would you then as a player want to go to America for 90,000?
Money, I suppose.
Yeah, once again, yeah, probably offered.
A bit like China is now.
Better style of life.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Sunshine.
I suppose so, yeah.
Right, we're going to have a bit of a half-time break. We're at the end of the calendar year for Chelsea, so halfway through the season. We'll continue with the second half of the season and have a bit of a reflect on it after the break. But before we do that, I should alert your attention to CFC UK. Now, there are obviously no more match days, but you can still get the best Chelsea fanzine around. You can get it digitally by subscribing online at cfcuk.net. Or, of course, you can get it physically by paying £2, including first-class postal delivery, by emailing your address and paying via PayPal to cfcuk@gate17.uk. Now, right now, there is an edition around that will get printed if people buy it, basically, because it's a special one to raise money for four charities: Help for Heroes, Leukemia UK, Help Them Help Us, and STOL, who are, of course, our next-door neighbours and look after homeless veterans. And by producing, basically we're going to produce a special photo-only edition of the fanzine, which will have photographs from the past decade. I think me and you are in there, aren't we, Clayton? Don't worry, you're on mute. You don't have to answer that. I think he is. But we're all in there, plus a load of other really interesting photographs taken with loads of people who are, kind of friends of the fanzine, really. So the target is to raise £500 per charity. So therefore, the cost is £6, inclusive of postage, within the UK. But it will only go ahead if we reach the target that we're trying to raise. So there we go. If we don't reach it, all the payments will be refunded. So send the payment and full address details to via PayPal to cfcuk@gate17.co.uk. We will return after this break. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy, I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Break.
Fans, real opinions. I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. This is the Chelsea Fancast with me, Stanford Chidge, him over there, Jonathan Kidd. And the lovely, delightful Mr. Clayton Beerman.
Good evening.
There you go. And we're into part two of our 50 Years of Chelsea series, which this week is 1979-1980. And we left Chelsea at the top of the Division 2 table by the end of the calendar year. And the beginning of the year, as Clayton was saying to me earlier on before we went on air, probably sums up Chelsea. 2 weeks in Chelsea's history that sum them up, perhaps, as a club more than any other. We play the highly fancied, highly rated, traditional big club Newcastle United at Stamford Bridge in January, I believe, first match of the new year. And we absolutely wallop them 4-0. I was watching this, actually, funnily enough, just before we went on air. But we basically beat them 4-0. Clive Walker scored a cracking goal, Clayton, which I forgot how good it was, actually. But do you remember much about this match? Were you there?
Yeah, I was definitely there. So basically, I don't know what it is, but over the years, we've got this thing that we really do give Newcastle a good humping every time we play them at home. And this may have been the start, because we absolutely just... because I think we were top and they were third.
Yeah.
And so they were sort of on our tails in the promotion.
No, they were top, we were second.
They were top, were they? And we were, okay. And we absolutely hammered them. And they didn't have a sniff that day. And I remember being so excited after that game and really, really gutted because I couldn't go to the cup game on the Monday and we were playing Wigan at home. And the point is, I think, and Jonathan may correct me, but we were playing Wigan on the Monday after we played Newcastle because we were supposed to play Wigan the previous Saturday, but it was postponed. So it was rearranged. And being at uni, I couldn't really afford to go to Saturday and Monday. So I was absolutely gutted because I thought if we had played like this against Newcastle, what we are only going to do to Wigan. And Jonathan, would you like to take the story on?
Well, let's put it this way. We were poor.
Poor? Poor?
We were very poor.
Oh, God. Against... Were they? I can't remember. Were they in the old fourth division or were they actually in the conference?
I think they were in the conference.
Yeah.
Good God.
Time. Yes. And it was abject is a good word for it, I think.
They only had one shot, didn't they? And it went in.
It went in. Yeah.
Scored by the bloke who would eventually set up Depeche Mode, Martin Gore. It wasn't really Martin Gore, but his name was Gore. But as Kelvin says in the book, it set up wonderful headlines like a gory night for Chelsea.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. An interesting thing about the Newcastle game before we just get on into the bowels of the Wigan game was how I didn't realise, I'd forgotten that the tunnel wasn't on the halfway line at that period. The pitch was further down nearer the shed. Did you know that? And that the East Stand was actually to the left much more.
Oh, that's right, because they only aligned it years later, didn't they?
Yes. So
Was that when they actually got rid of the shed?
They aligned it. It took that long. Otherwise, so you came out of the... Thinking you're on the halfway line, you weren't. You had to turn left.
Chelsea.
It's just so Chelsea, wasn't it? Another quick point just to mention it. And we missed out in the Notts County game, how I think somebody was about to play. Was it Frost? I can't remember. About to score. And the goalkeeper just walked out of the penalty area and grabbed the ball and handled
it. That's right. Yeah.
And the referee didn't book him or anything.
No.
Nothing happened.
No.
And then Barota came out and knocked somebody over outside the penalty area and was booked. And everybody went mad. All the Notts County players all came round and harangued the referee. And yet Chelsea didn't say anything to the referee about the goalkeeper. It was almost as if it was a different world and a different law. Yes, I'm allowed to handle the ball outside the penalty area and you can't do anything about it. Okay.
It's like tangent, chaps, but I've been, having watched these matches today, I've been dying to ask you both these two questions. I mean, number one, of course, is the old Butker. Is it Buckter kits? Remember the Buckter kits? Notts County? Yeah.
That's easy for you to say.
Not at all. Butt-kissed. Buckter kits, which kits. I remember as a kid as being horrible.
Weirdly, said better in an Asian accent.
Butka.
Buckter kit.
Don't start me. I miss the beer. Anyway, I remember those kits as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
The only kits that I know that were worse than that, the kind of 90s version of the Buckter kits, were Kappa kits. Like nobody, you either bought an Umbro or an Admiral. You didn't buy Buckter or Kappa. Unless you were from the north, I reckon. But anyway,
one of you.
Sorry,
the Buckter kits. I think that the ball boys at Stamford Bridge wore purple Buckter tracksuits.
No way. But we were wearing Umbro.
Don't you think? Can you remember that, Jonathan?
Yeah, it rings a bell. Yeah, Clayton. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they seem to come each season. They wore a different shade of something, and you wonder whether it was a rival firm. I don't think they paid any attention to consistency like that, did they? They didn't say no. Everybody's got
probably fell off the back of a lorry, didn't they, mate?
Yeah, they were probably probably. I was surprised they actually wore the same uniform rather than just a kind of their own shorts and their own socks.
Now, here's a question for you: Had you donned the Stanford the Lion kit by now?
79-80. It was my era. Was that so? Sorry. What was the game? Hang on, West Ham at home.
The ag was. Did you start all the ag, Jonathan, with the West Ham fans dressed as Stanford the Lion?
No, because it was a Saturday game. You were.
Yeah, mine was a Saturday. Stanford. Game. Yeah. You know, it was the next season.
Right, 80-81.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Now, listen, talking to Stamford Bridge, the questions I wanted to ask you, I noticed this watching the Charlton game. It's the first time thus far, you know, and okay, I've only been catching up on all the old YouTube clips, but as you know, I love the singing, so I've got my ear tuned into it. And thus far, Chelsea's repertoire seems to be, when they get scored against, it's you're going to get your fucking head kicked in, or whenever there's a really good challenge, Chelsea aggro. But yes. In the Charlton game, I hear, we'll follow the Chelsea over land and sea. And I haven't heard that up till now. And the other one I heard, this I think was up at Notts County, I heard them singing Carefree.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That's the first time I've heard we'll follow and Carefree this season.
I thought it was quite interesting, actually. All you could hear in the Notts County game, or the highlights of that Notts County game, was Chelsea fans singing.
Yeah. Great support that year, clearly. Yeah. But were these songs sung before then, Clayton? It's just a bit of a weird kind of coincidence that I just happened to have stumbled across two.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I sort of continue to be horrendously embarrassed by the fact that you can hear us singing You'll Never Walk Alone with the scarves up in all these clips.
No, I was saying everybody used to do that.
Yeah.
It was a generic song. It wasn't a... It was then appropriated by the Scousers. It was like I've never worked out, as I said before, but never worked out why the song from the musical Carousel was taken on.
Because
board.
Jerry and the Pacemakers did it, and Jerry and the Pacemakers were a Liverpool band.
So therefore, why did we embrace it? And various other clubs embraced it as well. What was
no
that?
Idea.
So they had a
no
right.
Idea. Apparently, was it? It was a huge thing with Celtic before Liverpool.
Oh, perhaps there was that connection as well.
I've got a great bit of info from good old Mark Meehan, who we had on last week. And by the way, people, if you were waiting for Mark Meehan's My Chelsea, I just had a bit. I had a mare this weekend because I had like seminars coming out of my ears, and I had got hauled up to London to do various things up there. And in between all that, I managed to put my back out. So it's been a bit of an eventful weekend. So I will get Mark's My Chelsea up this week, I promise. But Mark said on Mixed, he says, Eddie McCready was manager at Memphis Rogues, so would have bought David Stride.
Right.
So there we go.
Good information.
Good knowledge, Mark. Now, getting back to 79-80, woefully inconsistent. I see that this is when we begin our love-hate affair with Shrewsbury by losing to them 4-2 in the next match. But a couple of interesting signings happened around this time. I mean, I've told you already about Peter Rhodes-Brown and Kevin Hales emerging, but we bought three signings around this time. One was Colin Lee, one was Colin Viljoen, and one was Dennis Rowe. So all pretty experienced players. Colin Lee, of course, was a striker, played for Tottenham.
Yeah.
Colin Viljoen, a midfielder. Dennis Rowe, a pretty hard-nosed defender.
Lee became a good servant.
He did. He did. We'll let that hold your horses.
Hold your horses.
We also, of course, had the debut this season of the absolutely delightful, wonderful Colin Pates, who, when I interviewed him for the Chelsea special, spoke about this era just so articulately. But anyway, it occurred to me: how many football teams do you know who have had three Colins playing for them at the same time?
Wow.
There you go.
It's a very, very good question.
It's a very good question, isn't it?
I don't know if you're going to go back to it, Chidge, but can I just go back to the Shrewsbury thing?
Yeah, totally.
So this game, and I don't know if Jonathan remembers it, but this game is why we didn't get promoted. Because in this game that we lost 4-2 at home, a certain player called Chris Kamara, who played for Shrewsbury Town, took out John Bumstead.
No, he didn't. Not in not in this one. Maybe later on in the season, but Kamara wasn't playing in this match.
Oh, okay. Well, John Bumstead got injured in this game.
He did get injured.
And he was out for the rest of the season. And that, I thought, certainly at the time,
yes,
it cost us promotion. Because he was so important to us. And he was just... I remember he was stretched off. Awful, awful game. Good, I was part of the 18,120.
So what was it with Shrewsbury? I mean, I don't know. I think I have a kind of an affection for these matches because Psycho Phil and the Norman boys always talk about it. I mean, there's one match, it might have even been this season actually, where Phil took Stuart as a two-year-old toddler, complete with the, you know, those little harnesses you could get toddlers, right? So you had one of those. Phil at half-time, they're at the front, and Phil at half-time put Stuart down so he could roll up a fag. And before he could know it, Stuart had managed to crawl over the fence and was launching himself into, you know, running onto the pitch. At which point, all the Chelsea fans started cheering, Chelsea aggro, Chelsea aggro. This little two-year-old toddler doing a lone baby pitch invasion. It might have been the next season, actually. But
I have a memory of this, actually. I have a memory of a child going onto the pitch.
That was Stuart Norman.
Crowd being very, very amused by it, and shouting Chelsea aggro.
I think it might have been next season, to be fair. But that's always kind of like made me fascinated about us playing Shrewsbury. But we had a terrible record against them. Another West Country team, which this amused me royally when I checked this out on YouTube. But obviously we played Bristol Rovers. This is now getting towards, this is now in February. We're still third. And I mean, we got hammered, really, 3-0. But the match is not remembered for the result much, as I discovered by looking for match footage to find none but an ITV news report of Chelsea hooliganism and the FA trying to ban Chelsea from travelling away. But apparently the club sued the FA and they had to revoke the ban. Do you two remember this?
Yes. Yes, well, and also...
I remember the trouble.
But it was a typical reaction, wasn't it, to losing? If you lost like to a number of goals like that and played not particularly well, they'd all go mad and try and destroy everything. That was it.
I remember the police horses actually charging the terraces.
They had footage of that on YouTube. I don't know why. I mean, there'll be people that are listening, no doubt, and I shall ask a few mates. But there seems to have been a pretty big enmity between Chelsea and both the Bristol clubs, actually. I remember people telling me about a lot of ag at Bristol City whenever we played them. So I don't know what they put in the cider down there, but it clearly caused a bit of a ruckus. But moving swiftly on, we're still top of the league, right? With a month to go, we get to April and we're still top of the league. Now Clayton says that our season. I think it's a really good point actually about Bummers. Losing Bummers really hampered us because he's a great player for us. But we lost 1-0 at Leicester, who are in the hunt for promotion as well. We lost 1-0 to them, largely because one of their defenders clatters Petar Barotta. And, you know, basically they score as a result of that. And even on the commentary, the lovely Hugh Johns says he couldn't understand what happened there because Barotta had been clattered and it probably shouldn't have been a goal. But that didn't help. But we still go into the final match of the season, really... you know, with a good chance of getting promoted. We had to beat Oldham at home. Birmingham had to fail to win. And then Sunderland had a game in hand and they had their game in hand was against West Ham, who, of course, just won the FA Cup and were still very much on the piss. So guess what happened? Well, we beat Oldham 3-0, Birmingham won and Sunderland won, and we miss out on promotion by a point. Right?
No, it was goal difference.
Goal difference. Are you sure?
Yeah.
You sure? Okay, I'll give you a point. I'll give you a point. You're right, Clayton. You're right. I'll give you a point if you can tell me what the goal difference was.
I'm cheating because I'm looking. Birmingham was 20 and we were 14.
Indeed. So we miss out.
And the reason why I sort of one of the worst thing was, and I think I'm right in saying that we played on the Saturday, but West Ham didn't. Sunderland West Ham wasn't until midweek
because of the FA Cup. Because of the FA Cup final. Yeah.
But one of the worst results that we had, and I actually went to this game, and it was quite funny. Well, it wasn't funny at the time, was the fact that we got beaten 5-1 by Birmingham. And it was a midweek game, and it was really important. So we went up there, and I remember as I was taking my seat behind the goal, Peter Barotta was flapping the first one in. It was literally in the first minute. We went 2-0 down about another minute later. And I think Tommy Langley scored just before half-time and thought, we're back in this. We left at 4-1 and I got home back to uni. And I remember one of my college mates saying, oh, that was a tough old journey and all the rest of it, wasn't it? He got a bit of a hammering. I said, yeah, we lost 4-1. He went, no, you lost 5-1. So we hadn't even listened to the radio on the way back. Or it wouldn't have even been on the radio on the way back. We would have just been listening to music. And that, if you look at the goal difference behind Birmingham, that was one of the main reasons why we didn't go up.
They should have won then, of course. If they won, there wouldn't have been any problem at all. They wouldn't have been worrying about it. But it's accumulation of the season, isn't it, really? It's taking your eye off the ball in certain games. I mean, they around it. They'd won five of them, didn't they? They won the next four after, next three after. Then they lost to Rangers. It was just the run-in. Was it drawn, one drawn?
We won two, drew three. But you know, I'll get onto this in a minute. But very quickly, we've got some great posts on Mixlr that you'll love. Matthew MHL Gate 14 says Bristol away, people used to stop you and ask you the time to hear your accent to find out where you're from. Okay, and
That's what happened to me at Birmingham. Yeah. And I had to say, I'm not quite sure. I don't normally wear a watch. Yeah. And we got away with it.
He said my watch was stolen by the Peaky fucking Blinders. which funnily enough, actually, as a tangent, I missed lots of them on the first time round. I've just watched all five series, you know, off the trot, which has been great fun. So I've been going around going Peaky Blinders all week. Anyway, we digress. Talking of Birmingham, Joe Blogg says, when we lost to Birmingham Way 5-1, Barota scored a headed own goal.
Well, that must have been the first one. It was a corner. Yeah. It was an in-swinging corner. And all I know is that he was sort of waving it through. So whether it hit his head on the way in, I don't know.
And Aussie Simon... Sorry, Jonathan, go on, mate.
As if he tried to head it over the goal, because that's the kind of thing he used to do. So he may have been trying to head it.
Well, I saw a clip earlier today where he runs out of the box and he's outside of his penalty area to come to meet the ball and he heads it.
Yeah.
The guy was barking, wasn't he? Absolutely
worse
barking.
Worse than that, Gidge. Worse than that.
Aussie signed my broken leg says, I was there, it was a shit show. I saw Alan May score, says Hugh Johns, fought in the war. Only had one lung, but still smoked like a trooper. One of the great commentators. I've got to say, Hugh Johns is one of my all-time favourite commentators.
Absolutely.
He just made you so excited.
Corner, right side.
Yeah. I mean, he just got you so excited, didn't he, watching it? Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. He came up with one of the best commentary lines of all time. I can't remember what the game was, but an Ipswich defender. Ball came in from a corner. He tried to clear it, and he absolutely buried it. And Hugh Johns goes, he doesn't miss those.
he was just brilliant. I just loved him. Look, very quickly, before we get to the kind of the reflections of the 1979-80 season. And I know I've actually talked to people who were kind of in amongst this lot, but there was something very important going on May the 3rd, 1980. And this was just down the road, up in Kensington. The Iranian embassy was being held hostage by a bunch of terrorists. And a lot of Chelsea fans, Hickey's mob, basically, decided that they would go and, hurry proceedings up a little bit and were singing about it, apparently, on the day. And actually, they did. A lot of them did go up there to try and sort them all out. They were gently dissuaded from doing so by the police. And then, as we know, I think it was not necessarily that day, but around that time, a day or so later maybe, the SAS famously stormed the place and sorted it all out. But the thought of Hickey's mob taking the Iranian embassy.
I'll tell you exactly when it was. It was May the 5th, because it was my 21st birthday party. We were having a party in the garden at my house, and we all went inside to watch the live action.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it would have been. That would have been the Monday then, because the 3rd was the Saturday.
Well, yeah.
Strange times. Were you in the mob that was taking the Iranian embassy, Jonathan?
Funny enough, no, I was going out with a girl who lived in Redcliffe Street in Earl's Court, and we were watching TV, and I suddenly heard... And I said, I wonder what that is. Do you think that's...
Is that Hickey's mob?
Yeah. Well, fine enough, exactly what I said.
My mate Hickey, you were saying. Yeah.
Blowing the Iranian embassy up. Yeah, yeah.
It's just
the SAS men, of course.
It is one of... For those of us of a certain generation, it is one of those wonderful, kind of apocryphal, mad Chelsea stories. But as I said, I spoke to Martin King about this, and he says it's absolutely bona fide, absolute nutters, the lot of them. Now, talking of nutters who liked inflicting violence more on the pitch than off it, a certain young Mr. Harris, Ron Harris, it was his last game for Chelsea, that game against Oldham. How about that?
He did well, didn't he?
He did well, dear Ron, didn't he?
Who'd really shouldn't have been playing the last few years. But he was
great servant.
Well, yeah, but also he started playing differently. He started playing central midfield, didn't he? I mean, and he was a decent passer of the ball as well. You don't keep playing for a top club without having skill in many areas, as well as being an executioner of talent from time to time. But he was he was skillful and tactically excellent as well. Particularly his best period was obviously between 64 and 73, but he kept going, and it was. I think everybody, once again, the same with Benetti, agreed that the time had come. There was a kind of universal appraisal that yes, perhaps this was a season too far, but then he was still doing okay. So, and I think he was obviously a terrific presence in the changing room. I think that was something that similarly, Mickey Nutton said in his John Sitton, I should say, said in his article I listened to, that he found him charming and funny, but also a very good influence in the changing room.
Well,
which is what
it's a really good point, actually, because Gary Chivers on the Chelsea special I did with him was so fulsome in his praise of Ron, and he said he was such a lovely guy because he was like a father figure. I mean, obviously, Gary played in defence and would play next to Ron, and he would be telling him where to go. He'd be like coaching him all the time on the field and just giving him the benefit of his experience. And I think we underestimate this about Ron, don't we, Clayton? Because, you know, he gave everything for the club. He was actually really selfless in that form. You know, he helped people. He helped these youngsters through and develop. And it just shows you that actually you need to look at things in the whole, don't you? He might not have been as good a player as he was, but his experience was priceless, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he was with the club man and boy. I know that he went on a free to Brentford at the end of the season, but he was a fantastic captain. And it was quite interesting that Jonathan mentions that and you mention it, but just watching the highlights, if you watch the Newcastle highlights after Clive Walker scores, or it wasn't Clive Walker, it was the fourth goal. Clive Walker made the fourth goal. And they're running back to the halfway line and Harris is in his ear the whole time. Yeah. Not admonishing him, but he's talking to him and he's sort of, I don't know what he was saying to him. It might have been, where are we going later? Or, you know, what's for dinner?
A little more like, you've got the beating of that fullback every time. Keep going.
Yeah,
for it.
Something like that. Just keep doing it. Just, I mean, he was a great servant. I love him. And I've sort of spoken to him a couple of times in the recent years. And he's just a lovely man. And he's Chelsea.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as we said, we finished not 1 point off promotion. We were actually denied by goal difference, which does kind of give us all sorts of permutations. I think Clayton's point that had we not lost 5-1 to Birmingham, we would have gone up is true. Although they were six goals ahead of
six.
Us. Yeah, so, you know, it might have helped. I mean, Kelvin says that had Mickey Droy not hit the post in the first match of the season versus Sunderland, where we drew 0-0, we'd have been promoted, which is a good point. There's another thing he mentions, which I thought was wonderfully ironic in a sense, but a mere two seasons later, 3 points for a win was introduced in the league. And if it had been in place in 1979-80, would have been promoted at the expense of Birmingham. So I think...
Well, if you actually look at the final table, Leicester, who went up as champions, I think, I mean, we have more wins than them.
We have more wins than anybody. We had 23 wins. The other three above us, which are Leicester, who were champions, yeah, Sunderland and then Birmingham, they all had 21 wins.
Go figure.
Go figure. Well, look, given all of that, chaps, given how close it was, you know, you were both there. You were going. I mean, if we'd have missed out, if Chelsea had missed out, if I'd have been going as well and been more cognizant of all of this, missing out on promotion, on goal difference, I would have been gutted.
I was completely eviscerated.
Yeah.
I was listening to the bloody result, trying to get the results of the West Ham game all the way through, the whenever it was, the Monday, listening. And then you knew that they weren't going to win. And it was just, oh, it was so disappointing, as always. I was the same, gutted completely. Oh, God.
Yeah, no, it was awful. And I think it was awful because, you know, you started off the season with Blanche Flower in charge with sort of, you know, not much hope, but then we'd really hit some form. And it was just the fact that we'd stuffed up towards the end of the season. You know, it would have only taken another point, another, yeah, you know, another victory or a draw, yeah, or whatever.
Turn one of those draws into a win.
I went, yeah, to the guard.
Maybe it was the psyche of the team that you know, insofar as we now have the psyche of winning, that team didn't have it and they didn't know how to get over the line. And on the basis that we had Telford's ex-manager, maybe it just wasn't there, as it went on to prove.
I went into the garden and shouted and howled about being a Chelsea supporter. I remember at the time going, you know, the fuck's sake, I think it was the very fact that, as you say, we started off so inadequately with Blanche Flower, and it was the fact that we then just got better and better and started having runs of wins and got to be top of the table, and then not to follow that through and end up being promoted at least was just, oh, it was vile. Oh, God.
Indeed. Well, okay, just to put a lid on the season, the top scorers were Mickey Fillery and Clive Walker with 13 each. Most appearances, Petr Borota and Ian Britton with 44. And the player of the season was Clive Walker.
Rightly so. Had a terrific season.
Yeah, he did, actually. Let's give the man some credit. Right. Just your final thoughts on Peter Benetti retiring in 78-79 and what you generally thought about Petr Borota.
Obviously, it was sad when Peter retired, but I think it was on the cards and he was ready to go. I think that Petr Borota was a bit of a curate's egg, to be perfectly honest, at the time. In hindsight, not so much. I think he made his debut, you probably talked about this last week, I haven't caught up with the show, against Liverpool and kept a clean sheet. We're all thinking, oh, could have something special. But he just basically went from bizarre to ludicrous to just a liability. And when I was watching the earlier clips, it was quite difficult. And Mrs. Bierman is now telling me I have to go.
Dinner time.
Dinner time.
Let's go.
But no. I'll just finish off. It's quite interesting because thinking about him, there was in sort of the cold light of day, there's a sort of bit of affection. But having watched those clips back, and then I'm having those horrible memories of him being in goal when we lost 6-0 at Rotherham. Yeah, not good.
We'll get
he
to
was worse than I remember. I had a kind of affection for his madness, but then you look at him and think, oh, he's not a proper goalkeeper at all. Why did I ever think he was any good?
Yeah. We'll get to the madness of Rotherham in the next week or two, I suspect. Anyway, in the meantime, Clayton, you've been brilliant. Lovely to see you as ever. See you soon.
Thank you. You take care. Stay safe, everybody.
Will do. And JK, you've been marvellous. Absolutely marvellous.
Lovely to be on again. Thank you so much. And thank you for bringing Liam to me on. And and scaring me.
for bringing Liam to me.
What a way to end the show. Brilliant. Now, you look in Mixler, as always, you've been fantastic. I've loved reading your comments tonight. They've been absolutely top-notch, as always. Thank you all for listening. See you next time. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, and keep it chills. It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.